Hello, and thank you for joining us for Into the Killing. At the end of last week's episode, we said that in today's episode, we were going to look at the murder of a former beauty queen. However, as we were researching the case, we realized that the case is still in the court system. In each episode, we want to tell you the most complete story we can, so we'll cover that case in the future. Instead, in this episode, we are going to cover a bizarre and disturbing cold case that was solved, but there are still many unanswered questions regarding the case. The case began on February 22, 1984. The week before, Footloose, starring Kevin Bacon, was released. If you turned on the radio, you'd probably hear Jump by Van Halen because it was the number one song on the Billboard charts. 26-year-old Cindy Thompson lived in Pontiac, which is a suburb of Detroit, Michigan. She was 7.5 months pregnant. The father of the child was Cindy's boyfriend, Mark Davis. Just before 5 a.m. on February 22nd, Mark Davis went over to Thompson's house. He was shocked by what he found. He then drove 4.5 miles to a friend's home and had them call the police. The police arrived at Thompson's home and they found a gory crime scene. At the bottom of the stairs, there was dry blood and a clump of hair. In the upstairs bedroom, they found the dead body of Cindy Thompson. Her fetus was also dead. She was face down in a pool of blood on the floor. Her murder had been horrific. She had been beaten in the head and stabbed. Her organs were lying beside her body. She had a long cut on her back, running from the middle of her spine to her right side. There was a gaping hole in her back, which is how the organs were removed. The police looked around the rest of the house. They noted that the phone line had been cut. They found a bloody towel in the kitchen. There were no signs of a break-in or forced entry. The back door was unlocked. The medical examiner determined that the blunt object used in the murder was most likely a ball-peen hammer. A sharp object was used to stab, slash, and disembowel Thompson. One of the stabs severed her spinal cord. Another one lacerated her liver. The police then tried to piece together the last night of Cindy Thompson's life. She was living in a house that belonged to a couple who had children. Instead of paying rent, Thompson babysat for the couple. The man didn't like Thompson and he did not want her living in his home. On the night before Thompson's body was found, Thompson babysat their children until about 8 p.m. and then she went to the woman's workplace. The woman had received a letter from a friend and wanted to read it, so Thompson brought it to her. Thompson left the woman's workplace sometime between 8:45 and 9:15 p.m. A neighbor thought she heard Thompson pull into her driveway between 8:45 and 9 p.m. Then shortly afterward, she heard a second car pull into the driveway. A few minutes later, she heard the second car leave. A friend of Thompson tried to call her several times between 8 p.m. and 9 p.m., but the line was busy. She stopped calling around 9 p.m. without reaching Thompson. The police then asked Mark Davis what he had been doing before he found the body. He said that the day before, he and his friend had started drinking early. He went home at about 6:30 p.m., ate dinner, and then played video games. Early the next morning, he decided to go to Thompson's to get some marijuana he had been storing there. At this point, he had consumed about 5 bottles of wine. When he arrived, he found the dog out in the front yard, which was unusual. He went inside and found Thompson on the floor, but it was dark. So he changed the light bulb, turned on the light, and then he saw that Thompson was clearly dead. He tried to call 911, but the phone line was dead. So he got into his car and drove 4.5 miles to a friend's home that was in a different township and had them call 911. He then drove back to the crime scene and met up with the police. Davis said that he did not kill Thompson and she was dead when he found her. Davis explained that he and Thompson had been high school sweethearts, but they broke up before they graduated. They reconnected in 1981. It turned out that while Thompson was pregnant with Davis's child and they had been dating for years, Davis was still living with his common-law wife, Carol Egee. Since the late 1970s, Davis and Egee had been living together. Around the time of the murder, Davis was planning on moving out of the home he shared with Egee and moving in with Thompson. Egee was furious about the situation. The police considered Egee to be a suspect, but they didn't have any evidence that connected her to the crime. In April 1984, just 2 months after the murder, the case was filed away as unsolved and open. Many people said that the murder investigation was inadequate. In 1992, 8 years after the murder, the case was reopened. The police considered Carol Egee to be the prime suspect, and the new detectives investigated her. They discovered some disturbing things about Egee. For example, in late 1982, Egee and a friend broke into Thompson's home and ripped several t-shirts. In December 1983, Egee and a man who was never identified went over to the home that Thompson shared with her sister. Egee physically attacked Thompson, who was 5 months pregnant. Thompson's sister said that Egee only stopped because the man told her to stop. Egee told Thompson to stay away from Mark Davis, and then she and the man left. Egee supposedly told people that she planned on throwing Thompson down the stairs in the hopes that it would cause a miscarriage. Another witness saw Egee and Thompson having an argument in the doorway of Thompson's home the day before the murder. A man was with them, and the witness thought it might have been Mark Davis. A woman who lived with Egee in the week before the murder heard Egee say some interesting things. To her, it was clear that Egee wanted Thompson dead. Egee supposedly said something along the lines that killing Thompson would be doing Davis a favor because the baby would probably be deformed. The woman said that Egee told her that she could stay for free if she provided an alibi. The woman also said that Egee was looking for someone to kill Cindy, and apparently she had asked 2 men. Apparently, Egee had even spoken to Thompson's cousin about killing her. The woman also said that Egee went over to Thompson's home and tried to push her down the stairs in an attempt to kill the fetus. After the murder, Egee was asked to come to the police station. The woman went with her. She told the police that on the night of the murder, Egee had been home all night. But the woman had actually worked until 3 a.m. at McDonald's and didn't know where Egee was most of the night. After talking to several of Carol Egee's friends, it was clear to the investigators that she was a woman scorned. Her romantic partner was planning on leaving her for another woman who was pregnant with his child. So she wanted Cindy Thompson dead. While the police had a motive, they did not have any physical evidence. For the first time in the investigation, the physical evidence was sent to the state's crime lab. This included fingerprints and hair that were collected from the crime scene. After the murder, E.G. started dating another man, and they eventually broke up. When they broke up, she left behind a box. The box contained three hammers and a knife. He said that the knife was bent at the tip, and he noticed that there was some blood and hair on it. He ran the knife through the dishwasher. In 1987, the man gave the knife and the hammers to the police. The knife and the hammers were also sent to the crime lab. The testing by the crime lab revealed that most of the fingerprints belonged to Mark Davis and Cindy Thompson. Other fingerprints were found, but they were not matched to anyone. The hairs that were found belonged to Thompson and some other people. But one of those people was not Carol Egee. Finally, the knife and the hammers didn't have any of Thompson's blood on them. Experts were never able to prove if they were the murder weapons. Essentially, none of the evidence placed Egee at Thompson's house at any time. The county medical examiner reviewed the autopsy report and the autopsy photos. She noticed a large mark on the left side of Thompson's face. The original medical examiner said that the mark was postmortem lividity. This is simply caused by blood pooling in the body. Since Thompson was lying face down after she was killed, the blood pooled in her cheek. Nevertheless, the new medical examiner had a forensic odontologist, Dr. Alan Warnick, review a photo of the wound. He said that it was a bite mark. Sydney Thompson's body was exhumed, but the body had decayed too much to reveal any new information, and it was unclear if the mark on the face was from postmortem lividity or if it was a bite mark. Nevertheless, Dr. Warnick was convinced that was a bite mark. He compared the photo from the autopsy to the dental records of several suspects. According to Dr. Warnick, the only person who matched the bite mark was Carol Egee. The police finally felt like they had enough evidence to arrest Egee. 36-year-old Carol Egee was taken into custody at the end of April 1993, over 9 years after the murder. Carol Egee went to trial at the end of 1993. The prosecution's case was clear. Carol Egee loathed Cindy Thompson for stealing her man, and she wanted her dead. On the night of the murder, Egee got Mark Davis drunk by giving him wine. When he passed out, she took his keys and went over to Thompson's home. She let herself in, which explains why there was no forced entry or signs of a break-in. She then beat and stabbed her romantic rival. The prosecution had friends of Egee testify. They all said that Egee hated Thompson and she wanted her dead. Several witnesses also said she tried to hire two different men to kill Thompson. The woman who lived with Egee also testified that Egee had asked to provide her with an alibi. But there were problems with the testimony of the witnesses. Around the time of the murder, many of them were drinking heavily and doing drugs. Perhaps as a result of their drinking and drug use, they did not have accurate memories. They often said things in court that didn't match or even contradicted earlier statements they had made. Mark Davis testified, and he said he did not believe that Carol Egee was the killer. He said that she was at home with him all night. The star witness for the prosecution was Dr. Alan Warnick. The prosecution tried to get Warnick to explain what the odds were that the teeth marks belonged to someone else. He pointed out that at the time, there were about 3.5 million people living in the Detroit metropolitan area. He then asked, would any of those 3.5 million people's dental marks match the bite mark found on Thompson's cheek? Warnick testified that in his expert opinion, they would not. The prosecution argued that the bite mark evidence clearly established that E.G. was the killer. How else could her bite mark get on the dead woman's face unless she killed her? The defense's case was also straightforward. E.G.'s lawyer said that some of the circumstantial evidence was accurate. But there is a difference between hating someone and wanting them dead and beating them to death with a hammer, stabbing them, and disemboweling them. All the witnesses said that before the murder, E.G. wanted Thompson dead. But after the murder was committed, no one heard E.G. admit or even hint that she committed the murder. The defense said that the police ignored other evidence that implicated other people and solely focused on E.G. Notably, they said that Mark Davis could have been the killer. He had a key to Thompson's house and his fingerprints were found at the crime scene. Davis said he had been drinking at a friend's house and they went home and spent the evening with E.G. But his friend testified and he said that he had not been drinking with Davis that day. The defense pointed out that no paternity test was performed on the baby. Perhaps Davis figured out or became suspicious that he wasn't the father and he killed Thompson. The trial lasted 15 days. On January 12, 1994, Carol E.G. was found guilty of first-degree murder. She was sentenced to life without the chance of parole. For over a decade, E.G.'s lawyer filed appeals. Her final appeal argued that Dr. Alan Warnick should not have testified for several reasons. The first is that, in the years after the trial, his methods and conclusions had come into question. Five cases he had testified in had their convictions overturned after other dental experts disputed his findings. Secondly, Warnick made his conclusion based on autopsy photos. During an autopsy, if there is a bite mark on the body, it's photographed in a specific way to capture as much detail as possible. The photos that Warnick based his opinion on were not taken as if the wound was a bite mark. Instead, since the original medical examiner thought it was postmortem lividity, the wound was photographed that way. Also, the stat that Warnick gave that out of a group of 3.5 million people, the bite mark could only belong to E.G. was utterly unfounded. In July 2005, a judge agreed with the appeal and overturned Carol E.G.'s conviction. She went to trial over 2 years later in October 2007. The second trial was very much like the first one. But there was one significant difference. There was no bite mark evidence. The bite mark evidence was the only physical evidence that linked E.G. to the murder. No fingerprints or hairs or blood connected her to the crime scene. Also, the murder weapons had never been found. There were also no witnesses who placed E.G. at the scene or heard her confess or take responsibility for the murder. The prosecutor said that Cindy Thompson's murder was an annihilation of a person. Whoever killed her most likely hated her. There was only one person who hated Cindy Thompson that much, and it was Carol E.G. The defense tried to show that there were other possible suspects, like Mark Davis. He had a key to Thompson's house, he didn't have a good alibi for the time of the murder, his fingerprints were found at the crime scene, and he acted strangely the morning the body was found. For example, why did he drive so far from the crime scene to call 911? Another possible suspect that the defense suggested was Davis's mother. A man testified that Davis's mother asked him to kill Thompson. Carol E.G.'s second trial lasted a week. Then the jury deliberated for less than 5 hours. Once again, Carol Egee was found guilty of first-degree murder. At Egee's sentencing hearing, she said she wanted to apologize, but she did not commit the crime. Egee was once again sentenced to life in prison without the chance of parole. At the time of this recording, 64-year-old Carol Egee is serving her sentence. Some people do not believe that Carol Egee is the killer. After all, no physical evidence links her to the crime scene. She has always maintained her innocence. Other people do not believe she carried out the actual murder herself. They believe she hired someone or convinced someone to commit the murder. People find this frightening because the murder was absolutely grisly. If that's the case, is the person who annihilated Cindy Thompson walking around the streets today? But this is all merely speculation. The Pontiac Police and the District Attorney's Office consider the case closed. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. As always, our producer and sound designer is Annelle Clute Ye. You can follow her on Instagram. The link to her Instagram is in the description box. If you just discovered our podcast, we'd love it if you checked out our channel on YouTube, Criminally Listed. We have over 275 videos featuring some riveting and chilling true crime stories. You can find it at youtube.com/criminallylisted. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe or follow so you don't miss any future episodes. In next week's episode, we'll examine the tragic and convoluted case of a 5-year-old boy who was murdered in New Jersey in the early 1990s. Well, that's all for today. Thanks again for listening. Take care and stay safe.